For the week of May 3rd, 2009, this is Showbiz Sandbox, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And also in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
So this is our second go at our entertainment news podcast. Again, we're going to be on our own for a while until we figure out exactly what it is we're doing. We're also going to try and keep it down to a shorter,
manageable level.
Yeah, rather than an hour and 10 minutes, we'll try and keep it down to 40 minutes. And with that in mind, we should probably just get right to the news.
Yeah.
Probably,
Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine, that's it. That is the big news this weekend. Made
$87 million.
$87 million, obviously, came in first place. Hugh Jackman, just last week we were talking about Fox and how they seemed to be struggling as they shuffled around all of their releases. And here they are, $87 million later, and that's just the domestic gross. It earned an additional $73 million.
Can you imagine how much more they would have made? Yeah, internationally, sorry, but can you imagine how much more they would have made if it hadn't been pirated?
Yes, okay, so that was the big thing. This film seemed doomed to failure, not because it was a bad movie, necessarily, or that people were tired of the franchise, but because it was pirated. Somebody working on the film had put it online, and there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of downloads of it, even before...
The unfinished version,
yes, it was the unfinished version with green screens and...
But close enough to the real thing, from what I gather.
Correct. And actually, there were a bunch of bloggers that were making a fuss over the fact that now that the film is out and it's the same, it has the same running time as the version they downloaded, the pirated version, if you will, they were complaining that Fox initially, within 48 hours of the announcement that Wolverine had been leaked, they were complaining that Fox lied and said that the leaked version was not the complete or finished version, that there was 10 minutes of footage missing. And my feeling is, let Fox say whatever they want. They just spent $200 million making a movie, and somebody put it online, effectively robbing them. Who cares if they want to turn around and say the 10 minutes is missing?
Who cares if they lied? I don't care if they lied.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying...
They got royally screwed. I'd lie, too.
I'm in agreement. Coming in second place was...
Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Yeah.
Which I saw.
I saw it too, actually. Up at Show Canada.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Real, I mean, I didn't think it was horrible, but it certainly, you know, it was fluff.
I think that Jennifer Garner can do better than this.
You know, 2 hours looking at Jennifer Garner, I... did not have any complaints afterwards.
Well, yeah, but come on. After she did Juno, she gets stuck with this. I mean, I think that New Line probably made her do it. I think she has an option with them, but still. Whew.
Well,
sad.
That film made $15.3 million.
Ouch.
Well, I mean, it's no $73 million. Or sorry, $87 million.
Or anywhere close.
Right. But Battle for Terra, which was the animated film turned to 3D, earned just $1.1 million, so that kind of puts a little damper on the hype that 3D gained after Monsters vs. Aliens.
Ouch. Do we know how many theaters that was in?
Not off the top of my head, no.
I just wondered if it was a wide release or not. I didn't hear that much about that movie, so it doesn't surprise me that it didn't do well. If I'd barely heard of it, then it doesn't surprise me.
Roadside Attractions handled it for Lionsgate. Has a voice cast that stars Dennis Quaid. The failure to secure a critical mass of 3D auditoriums is what they're saying did them in, with just 460 extra-dimensional venues among its 1,161 playdates. So obviously it opened on far fewer screens.
Well, then you really can't judge it then, can you?
No.
But still, I did know that was supposed to be a big disappointment. How did Obsessed do? How much did that one fall?
It dropped 57%.
Ha-ha! Ouch.
Yeah. It dropped 57% to $12.2 million and finished in third place. And The Soloist fell a modest 42%, The Hollywood Reporter is saying, to earn $5.6 million in sixth place. They're not saying what came in fourth or fifth.
Rather a disappointing showing for The Soloist.
Yes. It's a pleasant surprise to see Wolverine do as well as it did, especially given the piracy issue. It also had the issue of a little thing called swine flu to deal with. In fact, in Mexico, they postponed openings not only for Wolverine, but it looks like they're going to be pushing a bunch of films, including Terminator, possibly Star Trek, if they haven't pushed that film already. I think they have pushed it. The theaters are in Mexico are closed by government order for up until Wednesday. And I spoke with an exhibitor that I work with down there, one of the larger exhibitors, and the gentleman I was speaking with told me that they lost 700,000 ticket sales last week. They'll lose 1 million ticket sales over this weekend and expect to lose in total at least 2 million ticket sales, which for them is a big deal. If you average that out to about $4 per ticket, that's 4 times 2 is $8 million. And and that's $8 million of cash flow that they were expecting. Certainly some of that would wind up in the pockets of distributors, but they really need that cash to pay employees, continue building theaters. Mexico's going through a huge multiplex boom right now, and so they're building theaters much the way we did in the late 80s, early 90s. And so the cash flow for construction is quite necessary. So closing theaters down for effectively 2 weeks is really killing them. I'm sure Fox is not happy about it either.
Ha ha ha, killing them. That's probably not a very funny pun.
I didn't mean it in that way, but yeah. Probably the other big story of the week came from Hulu.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Disney has finally struck a deal with Hulu, and it's quite the deal. They're actually getting a 30% stake in Hulu. And for those of you that don't know, Hulu is the online website at Hulu.com, H-U-L-U.com, where you can go and watch effectively all
TV shows and movies for free.
Full episodes. And of course, there's some ads interspersed, but it's modest advertising. In a half-hour show, there might be 2-3 minutes of advertising tops.
Oh, there's oftentimes just one in the beginning and one in the middle.
And that's it.
You have that option. You can have it that way, or you can have just one in the very beginning that's longer.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes you can choose like what kind of ad you want. You have like a choice between whether you want to learn about the latest, you know, Ryan Reynolds movie or, you know, the latest Ford car. It's pretty cool.
I'm going to go with the Ford car.
I would, of course, go with a Ryan Reynolds movie. But what I think is so interesting about this story is that NBC, for a while, like tried to do it on their own.
Well, it was NBC. NBC and Fox started Hulu.
Right. But oh, I'm sorry, Disney. Disney meant to do it on their own. Disney had their own player, and they had a deal with iTunes, and they were going to go that route. And it's so interesting that now Disney's kind of, for once in their life, like actually following somebody else's
model. Well, that's exactly what Stacey Kramer of Paid Content said, and this was republished in the Washington Post, that when Steve Jobs was putting the iTunes store together, he went to Bob Iger, and Bob Iger, who is the chairman of Disney, put all of ABC's television shows for sale on iTunes, which really helped launch the television and video portion of the iTunes store. Now, NBC and Fox get together, and they are first into this world of effectively IPTV, which is Internet Protocol Television. So it's television over the internet. It's like VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, which is how many of us make our phone calls now, except now people are watching a ton of television on sites like Hulu or TV.com, which is CBS's property. And so now Disney has jumped in and become a part of Hulu. So all of those ABC shows will start being viewable on Hulu.
Are they not going to be on iTunes anymore?
I'm sure they will be on iTunes.
But will they be free?
Probably not.
Because Hulu is free.
Hulu is free, but if you notice, they only have really about 5 weeks worth of past episodes. So if you go in, you'll see that the last 5 episodes are there, but then anything from a previous season or further back in this season is not there.
Oh, so they will be for Disney shows, they will be on iTunes all seasons.
Correct.
You can always go back.
Yeah,
and
you'll have to pay $1.99 per, at least right now, $1.99 per episode to watch them.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'd rather Netflix.
Well, this article in the Washington Post is very interesting because Ann Sweeney, who is the, what does she do for Disney?
head of digital?
Head of digital?
Something like that.
Yeah, well, Jeff Zucker of NBC is notorious for hating the digital world. He's complained that Steve Jobs and Apple have turned analog dollars into digital pennies. Or yeah. Digital cents, something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, he's not wrong, not really. I mean, it's just that that's the future. They're going to have to figure out a way to monetize it. So complaining certainly doesn't help anything.
Ann Sweeney is the co-chair of Disney Media Networks and president Disney ABC yeah. Television Group.
Yeah, she's really smart. I like
yeah, it. I mean, I've certainly heard her name mentioned about and read her name in previous stories about this type of thing. And she says to Paid Content, "We took a couple of years to really refine the business model, figure out the user interface, figure out how to make it a business and how to make it something that viewers wanted. Then we looked at usage so we could understand the next best step to take. And today we're announcing Hulu."
Yeah. In other words, we are going to Hulu with our tail between our legs.
Right. And she's asked whether they would switch to the Hulu player for everything. And she says, "No, because I think there is value to both." So she thinks somehow people are going to go to both the Disney portal and the Hulu portal to watch this content. And what she's really saying is that people are going to turn to ABC.com that are ABC fans of ABC. And those people that would always turn to ABC to find that content because they just happen to know that it's on ABC. And so it's not an incremental yeah. gain in audience. But for the incremental gain, for those people that are just casual viewers, well, we'll have Hulu, and they'll come in through Hulu. I don't know how.
Yeah, if you're a channel surfer, you go to Hulu. If you're appointment television, you're going to ABC.com.
Right. I don't know how true that is.
I don't know either, and I don't really like watching TV shows on a website's player. That really irritates me, having to always download the latest version. I found that whole thing really annoying. I liked at Hulu, I just go in and I just click on it and it's there.
I can tell you that there are people I know who only watch Hulu and are now beginning to think about canceling their cable.
Yeah, oh, I know those people too.
Years ago when our friends started getting, and of course us, the two of us, started getting cell phones, we all talked about cutting our landline. Now we have friends that are addicted to Hulu or TV.com or the iTunes movie store or television store or Amazon Unbox or Amazon Video On Demand, whatever they've named it now. And they're beginning to think about cutting their cable line, which is a cable operator's worst nightmare. And because of that, there's a movement afoot called TV Everywhere, which was started by Jeff Bukes. I think it was HBO's Jeff Bukes, who is the chairman of HBO, if I'm not mistaken. By Time Warner CEO Jeff Bukes, so it's not HBO. I think he used to work for HBO and was... I'm a few years behind. But what this is it's a plan to allow internet viewing of television networks, of cable networks, if you already subscribe at home. So it's an authentication or verification program. So if you are a cable subscriber and you subscribe to HBO and you're out and about or you're on vacation and you plug your computer in or your laptop in and you want to watch Sex in the City or whatever the big HBO show is these days, you can do that.
I don't think HBO has any really big shows right now. It's mostly Showtime.
Well, there's an article Ars Technica writes about it back on March 3rd. I could put a link to that in the show notes that really explains what TV Everywhere is. It's a hard concept to wrap your mind around, but think of it as when you show up to log into this whatever website it is to watch whatever television show it is, somehow they will check, and they is the big internet rulers of in the
internet, yeah, God in the sky.
They will check to make sure you're also a subscriber at home, and they'll just give away the stuff on the internet, which for cable operators such as Time Warner, Comcast, Cox, not such a good idea. I mean, they really don't want this to happen.
Because it's going to be free for these people, right? I mean, they're paying once to be able to watch it online. I mean, to be able to watch it on their TVs and then also online. So not paying anything extra.
You're not paying anything extra. In fact, Buick's whole point is that if they're already paying for it, just give it to them. It's just an added value.
I agree.
I mean, I certainly wouldn't mind it. I have no plans to cut my cable. and I would use it, that's for sure.
Well, I don't really like watching TV on my computer, so I probably wouldn't, but the option would be nice. But I mean, if I'm paying for cable, you should, that's the future. That's the way it is now. You have to make things available online. It's up to companies to figure out the best way to monetize it.
Ars Technica's story here says, in the case of TV, the TV Everywhere scheme could also put pressure on DVR makers and devices like the Slingbox by providing a simple, always-available archive of cable content that lives in the cloud and comes on demand. Buick's idea is that the service would be offered as an incentive to keep consumers from dropping pay TV altogether. It wouldn't necessarily come with any additional fee. Slingbox, of course, is the piece of hardware that you can attach to your TiVo or your television or your DVD so that you can watch your own television or TiVo on your computer over the internet. But there's the $99.
Why would I want to do that? I would rather have something that went the other way.
And, well, then you can buy the $99 Roku player. Or,
oh,
yes,
really?
Apple TV is another one. It's the same concept.
We should get them to be our sponsor.
And I've got to be honest with you. TiVo is... The TiVo HD models have become Roku players, effectively. They're just giant Roku players. Bigger hard drives, and they cost more money. But you can download stuff onto them over the internet.
See, that's what I need. Then I would start watching everything on that was on the internet, and I'd start watching it on my TV. I just don't want to sit in a hard, uncomfortable chair and watch TV.
Well, I have to say I love watching television online. Some stuff, not everything. Lost, I will not watch.
Why? I don't get it. It's such a different experience.
It is. It is. Some shows are good on the computer, others are not. I can watch The Office on the computer, Lost and Mad Men, I like to watch on television. But if you don't like watching television on a computer, you probably will hate watching a two-hour movie on a computer. And Sony, while everybody else is running to Hulu or TV.com...
Yeah, they're trying to convince people to watch 2 hours of a movie on Crackle.com.
Which is their own version of a video over the internet model. They are putting, I guess, films like Groundhog Day, Stripes, A Few Good Men, 1941, Big Fish, The Fan, some episodes of Godzilla, and Spider-Man 2, all on this Crackle.com, all for free, it looks like. The company has seen streams increase 84% during the first 3 months of the year, according to Variety.
Is there advertising on Crackle? There must be
advertising.
Yeah, otherwise I can't figure out. But, you know, even that would not give them that much money. People are not going to Crackle. I forgot all about Crackle. The last time I heard about Crackle was maybe 2-3 years ago.
Well, I mean, that's the big problem with all of this changing business model of broadcast is that everybody knows how the old model works. You know how to measure the audience. You know how to pay for the ads. You know how much money to spend on production. With this new model, nobody knows what the rating system will be, how you're going to be measuring the audience, who will be verifying it. I think that's really the big problem that everybody's facing at this point.
All right, let's move on and talk about TV. Let's go back to talking
like
about
real
TV
not real TV. Fake TV or computer TV.
Not fake TV.
In fact, I think most people will be watching the whole idea of broadcast will change. Well, speaking about broadcast and the way it's monetized and the broadcast model, this week, NBC starts the upfront season. Probably more than just NBC.
I love upfront season. Upfronts, of course, are where networks announce what their new shows are going to be, their new fall shows.
Right, and they're...
To advertisers, so advertisers will, you know, put up money for advertising.
That's right, yeah. They're really announcing them to advertisers. And so they
invite... Yeah, but it's always a big song and dance, and they trot out the big stars, and it's for, you know, those of us who are big TV watchers to find out what new shows are coming in the fall.
That's right, and they're held in New York usually, if not always, and they're big pomp and circumstance events where all the advertisers are brought to. In one case, I believe it's going to be held at Lincoln Center, and somebody else is holding it at Carnegie Hall. I don't know who is who at this point, who's doing it where.
Irrelevant. It's always just, it's a crazy week in New York. There are so many Television celebrities walking around the streets. It's crazy. All the flights to and from New York, it's just loaded with like television execs and agents and managers and celebrities. It's a fun week.
Well, NBC is up first on Monday, and the big news is that Southland Tales, is it Southland Tales? No, Southland,
Just
just Southland.
Southland, the Ben
The
McKenzie
Ben
show.
McKenzie show. And John Wells, the showrunner and producer for ER for so many years, is producing that show for NBC. And while its ratings continue to fall with each episode, it is definitely picked up for 13 episodes.
Yeah, that looks really boring. And it surprises me that that is most likely going to be renewed when I hear that ABC's The Unusuals, which is a much better show, is still on the bubble. But we can probably talk about that next week. I also hear that Parks and Recreation is expected to be
Which
picked
that
up,
show
the Amy Poehler
I
comedy.
watched one episode of that show, and it
It's
looks
boring.
boring. Well, it was boring actually, and the
They're negotiating My Name is Earl, is what I hear.
they're I don't get why they're negotiating My Name Is Earl. I like that show.
Oh, I can't stand that show, but I know that I'm wrong. I know that it's a good show.
They've also picked up Medium.
They expect that it will be for like half a
Correct,
season.
not an entire
They're
season.
not going to pick up, yeah, they're not going to pick up the full amount of episodes. Same thing for Law and Order, which is a big deal.
And the big news is, will Chuck be renewed or not?
Well, I'm telling you, I saw, or we were talking earlier before we started recording, I was at this Twitter panel and met the writer who is at Save Chuck on Twitter. And he's just like, just a writer guy. I would love to have that job. Frankly, I don't really care if Chuck is picked up or not. I don't really understand why it's been made this big deal out of at Save Chuck, the whole Twitter phenomenon that is surrounding Chuck. Who cares about Chuck?
Well,
It's not that good a show. Is it just me?
you know what? I don't really watch it, but then I don't watch a lot of television, unlike most of America who watches, get this, 151 hours per month of television. It's become a pseudo part-time job to watch television.
Part-time job. It's a
Oh,
full-time
sorry, yes,
job.
full-time job. My mistake. And actually, they also have some figures here, and I can't remember where I pulled these from, but I was reading them in preparation for the show. 150 hours per month of streaming video over the internet. So somebody's watching these shows online
At
and
work.
at work probably. Yeah, you're right. And there are a ton of people watching, ton, millions, the entire nation watching 151 hours on average of television per month.
I probably fit in that
So I
category.
guess there are a few people out there who watch Chuck, and those that do are really upset that it may be canceled. And there's a whole bunch of stories on in the news about the campaigns surrounding their fight, the fans' fight to save Chuck.
Yeah, I just don't get it. It's a geek thing. I realize that, but it doesn't seem to make any financial sense to do it. Its numbers are not that good. The show is not that good. I don't think any of the characters in it are particularly interesting. I don't get it.
For
If I was a network exec,
for
I
those
would
that like the
no,
show,
I
we
can't.
can give them your email address at the end, and they can
Yes, please do. Please do. Please write to me and tell me what is so awesome about this show.
expect the Chuck hate mail to be sent your way.
Yes, please.
Well, NBC, we'll find out tomorrow if they're going to announce whether Chuck is coming back next season. And tomorrow being Monday, we record on Sunday, and we'll post this on Monday.
Can I talk about some pilots that are expected to get picked up?
Oh, yeah, shoot.
Well, there are four that are expected to be picked up. One is called Community, which is about it's a comedy about a community college, and it's got Chevy Chase in it, which looks horrible. 100 Questions for Charlotte Payne, which is also a half-hour comedy with no big stars in it. Trauma, which is a one-hour drama set in a trauma center with Derek Luke and Jamie Sheridan. And then Parenthood, which is based on the movie, and it stars a whole got a fantastic cast: Craig T. Nelson, Dax Shepard, Erica Christensen, Maura Tierney, Brian Krause. And that's the one that the executive at the NBC Universal executive, Nora Brien,
Yes,
that
that was actually.
she died of a brain aneurysm this
Oh,
week.
so it was confirmed that it was a brain aneurysm?
I think so,
Yes,
yeah.
that was actually a very sad story. An NBC executive who was she in Vancouver? Where was? Oh, she was in
I
Northern
think,
California, actually.
yeah,
Nora
yeah.
O'Brien was her name. She was the drama vice president, the vice president of drama programming at NBC, was on the set, I guess between takes, was playing basketball with some of the cast and crew. She fainted and died. She's 42 years old.
So sad.
So here they are going into their upfronts. This happened, I think, on Friday, Thursday or Friday. And just days before their huge announcement on Monday, which, but yeah, very sad
story.
Yeah,
it's just an awful story.
So we'll find out tomorrow what NBC has up its sleeve. And in the meantime, some news is coming out of ABC that, unlike what we said last week, that Scrubs might be on the chopping block, it looks like talks are still on to try and bring the show back to ABC. Of course, it started on NBC. It moved to ABC last season. Its ratings haven't been that great. It's not an abysmal failure over at ABC. It's still getting some modest numbers. And they brought a whole bunch of new interns and new cast members on this year.
Who I believe are doing webisodes.
Yes,
right
and
now.
Yes, and now if the SAG agreement goes through, they'll be paid for them.
Yes, exactly.
But there's some talk about bringing Scrubs back in Variety. Variety had a...
Well, I know that John C. McGinley and Donald Faison and somebody else have already gotten... they've already signed on to do pilots in the spring next year, to pilots that will be in, you know, next spring's series of shows. So my guess is that those shows are in second position, meaning that if Scrubs goes, that they cannot do their new shows. But I also think it's pretty indicative that it's highly unlikely that Scrubs will have another year.
Well, right now ABC is trying to get 20th Century Fox Television, which produces the show, to lower its fee and to possibly bring Zach Braff back, at least for a couple of the episodes. He's made some public statements that he's not interested in continuing. So, again, during their upfronts, we'll find out whether anything came of that news.
I bet you they bring it back as Scrubs interns.
That would actually
be funny.
I bet you
they take the webisodes and put them online and put them on regular TV.
That could actually work.
Yeah, and then there's no question that they would get paid for it.
Yeah, good point. Well, with all of the business models changing and the upfronts, they're hoping to surpass the $8.9 billion in advanced advertising sales for the upcoming television season during the month of May. Meanwhile, you've got Hasbro and Discovery Channel trying to build a kids' television network for cable around toys, which I...
Meaning what? Transformers?
G.I. Joe, My Little Pony, and other classic toy brands. So they're going to take Hasbro's brands, Discovery Channel's clout, I suppose, and experience of putting cable networks together, and they're going to try and put a television network together for cable television. Discovery has a kids' channel. It's called Discovery Kids. And it's no Cartoon Network and no Nickelodeon.
Do you think this is like a Transformers thing?
Well, again, Hasbro has already moved into entertainment through Transformers. They have another film coming out this year, another Transformers film. And they also have, I don't know whether it's a new chief executive or they certainly have, David M. Zaslav is the chief executive at Discovery, and he, I don't know whether he's new or not, but he has certainly been on a campaign to reformat all of the Discovery Channel properties that weren't working. Because right now, Animal Planet, Discovery Channel, and TLC, or the Learning Channel, generate, according to Variety, 80% of the revenue for Discovery. So all of those other channels, like the Discovery Health Channel, which is now being turned into the Oprah Winfrey Network, doesn't make any money. So maybe this is their way
of... Well, as soon as it turns into Oprah, that'll change.
Right. Well, that's very true. This might be their way of trying to stem that tide and increase revenue. We'll see if it works. We talked a little bit about Lost, about whether we... You know, personally, I like to watch Lost on television. There was an article in Variety about a former coworker of mine. I worked at Disney with Michael Giacchino when he was in the publicity department, and I worked with him in the publicity department, and he always said he wanted to run off and be a music composer. And this year he conducted the Oscars orchestra, the orchestra at the Oscars. He has been nominated for an Academy Award for Ratatouille. He did the music for The Incredibles, and he also does the music for Lost. And it is coming out.
The Gong?
The Gong, yes. Or whatever. You know, you can actually, you know, you can make fun of that music, but think of it this way. He was one of the composers that helped bring back a full orchestra to television scores.
Well, they actually have, there's a beautiful score to that. There really is. That they always play during, like, Kate and Sawyer moments, some Kate and Jack moments. They have, it makes me a little teary. Your guy is good.
Well, yeah, I mean, he always said he wanted to be a composer, and would play some stuff for me, and I thought, oh, you know, that's interesting, and, you know, you never really hear about it. And then years later, somebody told me that they had run into him, and he was the composer for Alias.
Wow.
And of course, he stuck with J.J. Abrams. He did Lost, and now Varese Sarabande is releasing a soundtrack of a fourth CD of Giacchino's Lost. For some reason, when I read this, I thought it was just the first one, but no, it's the fourth CD of Giacchino's Lost. So,
how much music in Lost is there?
A lot. 30 minutes, actually. 30 minutes per episode. Quite a bit.
Really?
That's a lot for a television show, yeah.
Hmm.
You know, he also scored a little movie called Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that little movie.
Yes. I saw it in IMAX in Montreal. Well, I was up there for Show Canada, saw it on the big screen. I don't know if that's a film you want to see on IMAX. The sound was phenomenal. The picture was phenomenal. But as you know, J.J. Abrams loves the shaky cam.
Oh, God.
So seeing shaky cam, you know, five stories high, maybe not the...
No, I would get sick.
Yeah, I can tell you, you know, this movie's going to do such big money. I mean, it's going to clean up.
More than Wolverine, you think?
Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. More than Wolverine. I don't want to say whether I liked it or not, because I'm not a film critic, but I will say...
You have an opinion.
I would certainly recommend it. I would certainly recommend it. I'm not a big Star Trek fan, though. I don't really know a lot of it.
Well, neither was J.J. Abrams.
I don't know any of the lore, any of the...
Neither did J.J. Abrams.
And it was a fun ride.
You know what interesting bit of trivia I read about this morning? Chris Pine, who plays Captain Kirk, is the son of the sergeant in Chips. Isn't that interesting?
I did not know that.
Trivia for you today.
Rounding out our television news this week, it looks as if the love affair that the U.S. has, or U.S. television audiences have, with our new president, Barack Obama, may be waning, because ever since he became president, his primetime press conference viewership has dropped, and there were some conflicting reports during the week whether Fox, which decided to not run, it was the one network that decided not to run President Obama's primetime press conference because they wanted to air their, I guess...
Anything
that McCain, yeah, or anything other than that. Actually, anything other than a politician speaking into a camera. They aired a new drama, Lie to Me, instead. And then later on, they did some American Idol thing.
Are you kidding? They put Lie to Me on instead of Obama's conference? That's really rather ironic.
Well, I did not see the president address the nation. I was in Canada. I would imagine it had something to do with the swine flu.
Oh, I saw that. Just told us not to panic.
Yeah, 29 million people.
Well, clearly Fox wants us to panic.
29 million. Well, maybe. But they're going to tell you in their own way. 29 million people across 10 stations. And then later in the evening, American Idol wound up getting 22 million people. So combined, they're saying, I guess, that Fox beat Obama. However, Newsweek says... The headline is, Ratings Slide for Obama's Presser, But He Still Beats Idol. Meanwhile, you've got McCain, who I guess maybe people are interested in seeing because AMC has him on for a movie marathon. He's going to be doing a war movie marathon. I think maybe it's Memorial Day. Let's see. Variety had the story.
That's something so wonderfully rather pathetic about that. You've got Obama, who's dressing the entire nation, and you've got McCain, who's addressing a bunch of old people.
Well, yeah, or anybody watching AMC, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that should really be done. You know, I don't know whether McCain should really be doing that. But then again, I don't know whether...
What else is he doing?
I don't...
Okay, he's running Arizona, but still.
I guess, well, he's not running Arizona. He's a senator from Arizona. But you could,
well, you know what I mean.
You could say the same thing about Oliver Stone, though, who is who has been talked into by 20th Century Fox directing a sequel to Wall Street 2.
Yeah, Greed is Good Again. And it's going to star Michael Douglas. But it is not going to star Charlie Sheen.
I wonder
why. Who are they getting? Oh, they're getting Shia LaBeouf to step in and be, you know, a young, you know, a protege or something. And it's being written right now. I think they're hoping to start production sometime next year. And it's going to be more or less addressing everything that led us into these economic hardships right now. And I believe Gordon Gekko, who's played by Michael Douglas, it's been a long time since I've seen the movie, but I think at the end of the last movie, he was indicted and sent to jail. And this movie takes place when he gets out. I, for one, would probably see it.
I would definitely
see it. Wall Street I found rather upsetting and sort of boring, but I was also a lot younger.
I would definitely see it.
Yeah, I think I'd really like to see a fictionalized version of what happened, because you read so much about it, you know, in all the magazines, and it's sort of hard to follow. But I bet if somebody wrote a really good fictionalized version of it, that we would all maybe for once really understand what exactly happened.
A lot of people lost a lot of money.
Yeah, and a lot of rich.
That's the
rich
synopsis.
People got even richer.
Well, I don't know if I'd see Sex and the City too. I might see Wall Street too. You would?
Oh yeah.
I was never a big Sex and the City fan, but apparently, Chris Noth is.
I believe it's Noth, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's Chris Noth has been signed. Thank you. has been signed to play Mr. Big yet again in Sex and the City 2.
Yay!
Hi. Can I pay him not to star in Sex and the City 2?
No, he has to be in it. He's Mr. Big.
Do they have the rest of the cast?
Yeah, I believe so. Oh. I think that when they all signed on to do the first one, they all agreed to do a sequel if the first one did X number of dollars.
Can I pay them?
I don't know that for certain, but
can I pay them not to do it?
No, it was a good movie.
I'll just give them my $10 and just say, look, don't make the movie. Just here's my $10.
No, how could you possibly say that? The first Sex and the City movie was really good.
I never saw it.
The TV show was really good. This was groundbreaking stuff.
I never saw it. I never saw it.
This is so sexist of you to be talking like this.
Look, I wouldn't pay to see this other movie that they're going to remake. Drop Dead Fred. I wouldn't pay to see that. I never paid to see it the first time.
Yeah, when Phoebe Cates was in it, you didn't?
I did not. No, well, no. I was also much younger.
You were going through puberty when the first Drop Dead Fred came out.
When did the first movie come?
I have no idea, but it had to have been like 15 years ago. This new one is going to star Russell Brand, the comedian who is in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And he is actually very funny.
He's very funny, but he's really kind of, I don't know, immaturely obnoxious, although I get it. He's a lot funnier than you think he's going to be. He's the best thing about, arguably the best thing about Sarah Marshall. But what about Don Johnson set to play a porn director?
Yeah, well, very fitting, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the movie, but I do that. He kind of lost me at porn director and Don Johnson, which I thought was hysterical.
Typecasting. Yeah.
It's nice to know that he's working.
It's nice to know somebody's working in this time of huge unemployment figures. Don Johnson gets a job as a porn director.
Oh, it's called Born to Be a Star, and it's an Adam Sandler movie.
Yes, I'm sure it's a comedy.
I mean, I would hope so.
If you read the synopsis.
There's Bruce Willis, who's getting a ton of offers right now, and I don't understand why this is like such news. Since when did Bruce Willis stop getting offers? That's what I don't understand.
Well, there was a little bit there in the 2000s after The Sixth Sense, where he made some questionable movies, and well, I guess he's always made questionable movies.
Well, he's sort of a douchebag, but he's still a movie star. But it was in this blog called riskybusinessblog.com, which is the blog for some Hollywood Reporter, I believe.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, it was apparently big news that he's, you know, getting all these movie offers. I don't understand. I don't understand what the big deal is.
By the way, 1991, Drop Dead Fred was 1991.
1991? That's it?
And I was not.
That was 15 years ago. It shows how old I am.
And I was actually quite old at that point, practically graduating from college. So maybe I thought it was too below me to see it, as with the rest of the world, because it did not do very well critically or financially. But on video, it became a cult hit, and so now Universal's going to remake it with Richard Brand starring.
Well, I'm sure it'll do really well.
And, you know, starring with Don Johnson is Christina Ricci and Stephen Dorff. Did you say that already? And I'm now repeating.
No, I didn't. I just said that it was an Adam Sandler either. I don't think he stars in it. I think it's just his production company, Happy Madison, is doing it. I'm sure it will be a big hit.
It's about a small-time nerd who. So this is the Don Johnson porn
star.
As a porn director, Born to Be a Star is the name. Adam Sandler is going to be producing. It's going to be released by Sony. And it's about a small-town nerd who learns his quiet and demure parents were famous porn stars in the 1970s. This motivates him to leave northern Iowa for Hollywood, hoping to follow in their footsteps and fulfill his destiny as the biggest adult film star in the world. All right, I'll pay to see that.
No, I totally would not.
Come on.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous in the same way that Zohan was ridiculous.
Well, and there's a reason I didn't see that movie, too.
Yeah, I didn't pay to see that movie, but I saw it.
Stupid. Adam Sandler is losing his relevancy.
Oh, again.
That's just my opinion.
The hate mail can be
moving
mailed.
Moving on from my hatred.
Well, speaking of people making movies, it looks like Lionsgate's going to get a few more movies out of Relativity.
Yeah, it's a deal that I don't really understand. I know that Relativity's got like a 5-picture deal with Lionsgate, where Relativity essentially is in charge of everything. They have full creative control, and Lionsgate basically does shipping and handling, right?
I have no idea how this will work, because it's a...
Can we name some of the movies that Relativity has done?
Sure, yeah.
I can't think of any off the top of my head, but...
I thought you were going to name.
No, I can't remember. I want to say that it did Ghost of Girlfriend's Past. It does those types of movies, kind of.
They did 310 to Yuma, and The Bank Job, and The Forbidden Kingdom. So they make movies that are...
Yeah, they make movies that people see.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, go on. I just wanted to get that out there, why we should care about Relativity, despite the fact that my old boss still now works there.
Well, one of those films is going to be Witch, which is directed by Dominique Sena and stars Nicolas Cage and Ron Perlman.
Won't be saying that. Go on. I'm sorry. I can't stand Nick Cage. I cannot stand him. He's such a poser. Go on.
No comment. Brothers, directed by Jim Sheridan, starring Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Natalie Portman. And we were just talking last week about what the heck happened to Tobey Maguire. Well, apparently he's working with Jim Sheridan. So there you go.
Apparently he's doing a Relativity Media movie. Good for him.
You know, Relativity has really come on strong. They have agreed to co-finance a large portion of the Universal Pictures slate through 2015, and now they've got this 5-picture deal with Lionsgate. I'm a little confused as to what it means for Relativity, because they're putting up the print and advertising money, so all of the film prints that get struck will be paid for by Relativity, all the advertising that gets placed will be paid for by Relativity, and all the production that gets placed will be paid for by Relativity. What does Lionsgate bring to the table? I'm missing something.
Well, does Lionsgate even do distribution?
Oh, actually, it covers up to 5 movies a year. A multi-year output deal with Lionsgate covers up to five movies a year. That's from Variety.
Okay, so Lionsgate must do distribution.
Yes,
that's what they get at.
Yeah, they are a distributor, so thus they do distribution. But if you're paying for the print and advertising, and you're paying for the if you're paying for the production, you're pretty much paying for everything.
Well, having a distribution arm, though, is, you know, kind of a big deal, and Relativity clearly doesn't.
Well, Lionsgate is in a little bit of trouble.
Financially,
they've been trying to lower their overhead, which runs about $120 million a year. They have $325 million in debt, which they had an offer from Carl Icahn, their third largest shareholder, to buy out the debt, Carl Icahn being the activist shareholder. I don't know what he... How to describe Carl Icahn, but he's a...
Like a Kirk Krikorian type.
Yes, correct. A leading businessman, one of the world's leading businessmen.
There you go.
He made an offer to take the debt off their hands, the $325 million off Lionsgate's hands. That offer expired on Friday. No word on whether it was accepted, but I doubt it. Ideally, the Relativity deal helps Lionsgate with the number of releases they'll have each year, because part of lowering their overhead, they were going to cut back on the number of films they produce. So here they have this up to 5 pictures per year coming from Relativity. That'll help them replace some of those films. And another company that is struggling is Viacom, Sumner Redstone's company. Earlier this year, due to the...
Which, of course, owned Paramount and CBS and...
Right, and they announced this week that their profit tumbled 34% last quarter.
Ouch.
Yeah, but according to their chief executive, Philip Dunan, we have seen signs in the last several weeks that the economy might be stabilizing, he says. We're feeling considerably better than we felt 2 to 3 months ago as we enter this important upfront season. So Viacom, of course, owns CBS, it owns Paramount Pictures, but it also owns National Theaters. And this is how Sumner Redstone got his start. He started as a theater owner, and that's one of the ways he got his start, and parlayed it all into this huge conglomerate known as Viacom. And right now, because he missed some bank covenants and some paying back some debt, he is being forced to raise some money for that, to pay those debts back, by selling National Amusements, which is a theater chain that has well over 1,000 screens.
Yeah, it's one of the top five.
It's within the top five.
I don't know, though. I mean, running a theater chain, I mean, that's... theater chains lose money, from what I understand.
Not this year, they're not. Regal's... Regal's stock is up, and Regal is making a record revenue.
Really? Because I'd always heard that theater chains...
Well, maybe not. Maybe not record revenue, but certainly... They weren't hurting as much as they were in 2005 and 2006.
Okay. Then you have more information than I do. I think of theater chains as always losing money, and that's why they bulk up the price of their food. It's because that's the only way they can make money.
That's true. That is very true. That's a whole other story. But it's because they give 50% of everything they sell, at least, back to the distributor who made the film. Mm. So there, right now, it looks as if National Amusements is trying to sell some of their theaters in bulk. They have theaters in all over Russia, Latin America, the United States, and the UK. And what Citigroup is trying to do is sell the UK theaters en masse. And, you know, all of the theaters in the UK, you have to buy all of them. Likewise, in the United States, they're trying to sell all of those theaters as well, the whole lot of them. What Sumner Redstone had done was keep some of the more attractive properties out of the lot that he was selling. And now he's put them back in, and they're thinking that maybe because of that, the offers will go up. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine a lot of people having enough money to purchase the fourth or fifth largest movie theater chain in the United States during a credit crunch.
Yeah.
So and Carl DiIorio from the Hollywood Reporter had the story, and he says here there are three points that seem clear. It is unlikely that any strategic buyers, other theater circuits, will place bids for all of the assets in either the U.S. or the U.K. And that's really because if they took all of the theaters on, they'd actually have theaters in the same markets that competed with one another, and there'd be antitrust issues, and there'd be some zoning issues, and so there's no way that an AMC, a Regal, a Cinemark could come in and just buy the whole lot. They'd have to parse it out.
Well, otherwise it's a monopoly. Correct?
Well, it's not a monopoly.
City or whatever.
But there's certainly some anti-competitive problems that you'd run into.
Let's talk about something else having to do with theaters, which is the cost of 3D glasses.
Yeah, that's actually...
talked about 3D earlier.
Yes.
That's a great story.
Yeah, another... And we carried both the National Amusement story and the 3D glasses story on Celluloid Junkie earlier, which is a blog I write for. And this is an interesting story that has been going on for a long time. 3D glasses, and I'm going to try and make a very long story short. 3D glasses come in two flavors, passive and active. Passive are the cheap throwaway kind. They cost between 75 and 90 cents, and they're disposable. You pick them up at the box office when you buy your ticket. You put them on in the theater, and on the way out, there's usually a recycle bin, and you throw them in. Now, right now, in the U.S., movie studios are paying for those glasses at 75 cents to 90 cents per, or 99 cents per pair. They want to stop doing that. In Europe, they haven't paid at all.
Who pays for it?
The theater owner.
Well, how is that fair? If a studio decides to make a movie 3D, well, then they should be the ones to supply the 3D glasses.
Right. Well, I guess what the studio is saying, look, there's other technology out there that will allow you to not have disposable glasses, that will allow you to have active glasses. Now, active glasses are these glasses that have LCD screens in the front. Now, when I say LCD screens, I should say LCD lenses that flicker. Now, you can't see the flicker at all. So the flicker is left eye, right eye, left eye, right eye, left eye, right eye, and it does that continuously as the film is projected, and it's showing you the left image and the right image to make the to give you the 3D effect.
That sounds migraine-inducing.
It actually isn't. It sounds far worse than it is. It is the system that they will be using in Cannes in a week or so to show up, because Expandi, I believe, is a European company or a French company, and they're using that system to show up the Pixar
Up
film.
the movie. For a second there, I thought you meant in order to show up,
No,
period.
no, no. Up the Pixar animated film is opening Cannes.
Right, right. I didn't know
Expandi,
that.
the 3D glasses and 3D system technology provider, is providing the system for that festival. This is a big deal. It was a big deal at Show West a couple weeks back in March, when Fox kind of said that they weren't going to be paying for this anymore after Ice Age 3. It's something that you're going to be hearing a lot more about, at least within the industry. But I don't know that consumers really care. They'll start caring if theater owners say, "Okay, we'll pay for it," and then we're just going to pass that on to the consumer.
Oh no, does that mean movies are going to go up again?
Well, 3D movies already, they're already charging a surcharge for that. But Fox was very smart, because they really figured they could get away with this because they have James Cameron's Avatar, a big 3D movie from the director of the Titanic, coming out at the end of the year. Now, they can't rightly say to theater owners, if you don't pay for glasses and if you don't show this movie in 3D, we won't allow you to see, or we won't allow you to play Avatar, because that's block booking and that's against the law in the United States. Now, in Europe, what theater owners have said is, fine, we'll play Monsters vs. Aliens, DreamWorks, but we're not going to play it in 3D, because you're not paying for glasses, and we have to pay for the 3D systems that get put in place, which cost $75,000 at a minimum for the projector, the digital cinema projector, the digital cinema server, and upwards of $100,000 once you start adding on all of these 3D systems, Real D being the leading provider of 3D systems. And they're the ones that use the throwaway disposable glasses. Dolby also has a 3D system, which has recyclable glasses, which you can use for about 18 months. However, they cost $25 a pair. So can you imagine being the theater?
Yikes.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Pass.
Yeah, actually, one of their first screenings they had with that used that system was in Hollywood, over at the ArcLight Cinemas, and they lost 1,000 glasses, from what I understand.
What, did people steal
The
them?
first night. Yeah, people walked off with them, thinking that, oh, we could
I
just.
would. That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're really this circular polarization. It's very nice. They look
I will
very
never
nice.
be allowed in a movie theater again, of course. I just said that.
But so it's this is a topic near and dear to my heart, given my day job. But it's kind of techie, kind of geeky. But I don't know what the right answer is. I do know that Europe is kind of having a quiet little chuckle, because they thought we had it so good over here in the United States with the studios paying for 3D glasses, and now everybody's assuming that the rest of the studios will go the way of Fox and just not pay for the glasses. You're really thrilled about that subject, so we should probably move on.
I really honestly couldn't care less, but I understand that it's an important issue.
I do know that a subject near and dear to your heart is one we opened with last week.
Which is the William Morris and Endeavor merger. It is very close to my heart. I don't know why. It's really nothing more than just gossip, but it feels like two popular groups merging and deciding who is going to be top dog, queen bee, and who is going to get kicked out. I think it's so fabulous. The boards of both the agencies met this week and they approved the merger. And the chairman of William Morris Endeavor Entertainment is going to be Jim Wyatt, who's the current chairman of William Morris right now. And the co-chairman, co-CEOs are going to be Ari Emanuel and Patrick Whitesell from Endeavor, who are the big guys at Endeavor, and Dave Wirshafter, who is at William Morris. Now, I don't know how a co-CEO interacts with a chairman, but I think that's going to be really fun to watch those four people. And
Well,
they're people. Go on.
I was just going to say, let the firing begin.
It's going to be so exciting. I absolutely cannot wait. It's already started to happen. People who are leaving. Tom Strickler, who's one of the original founders of Endeavor, he's leaving. David Lawner, who was J.J. Abrams' agent, he is leaving.
Which Nikki Fink predicted, and we kind of mentioned that last week.
Yeah. And you said last week you questioned whether he was J.J. Abrams' agent, and he indeed is. Longtime agent, I believe.
And Steve Rabineau is leaving.
He is leaving. He's going to UTA, United Talent Agency, a rival, which is fantastic scoop. I love that. Brian Lipson, he's leaving. He was at Endeavor. He was Big Lit agent, I believe. Gottler, Lit Management.
Yeah, I think he's a book agent.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, the reality is, William Morris has the better book department and has a music department, whereas Endeavor has no music department.
You have just segued into something very interesting that is my next thing to talk about, is what each one is getting out of it and why they merged. Now, William Morris, which has been around for 111 years, can you believe that? They have 300 agents. They are best known for music and touring, where they make like $80 million a year. Their TV packaging department, where they packaged everything from Andy Griffith to Cosby Show to Everybody Loves Raymond. Their reality TV department.
And what's important about that, what's important about that is the residuals that you make on something like that as an agency last
gazillions of dollars.
Yeah, last decades. They have deep, deep pockets.
Yeah. Also, reality TV, Dancing with the Stars, which always comes in the top 20 every single week. They also, and this is something I didn't think about, they have a huge international presence because they've got offices not only in LA and New York, they've got offices in London and Nashville and Miami and like Shanghai.
Yes.
They're all over the place. Then you look at Endeavor, which has always been kind of the little engine that could. They've only been around for 14 years, but they're well known for having these kind of young, aggressive agents like Patrick Whitesell, who is kind of became known for Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. That's how his big old claim to fame. And they also have a stronger talent base. They have, who does Endeavor have?
They're client rich, as Variety points out.
Yeah, they're client rich. They have, you know, Ben and Casey Affleck. They have like Amy Adams. They have Tina Fey, Hugh Jackman. And they've got some major names, which they have much bigger names than William Morris has.
Well, Ari Emanuel, who left ICM in 1995 to start with Tom Strickler and two others, I believe.
Oh, I wrote this down. With Tom Strickler, Rick Rosen, and David Greenblatt.
Yes, is now going to be back with Jim Wyatt, who left ICM in 1999 to go to William Morris. He's going to be back. Ari Emanuel is a big agent. He is the inspiration for the Ari Gold character on Entourage.
Right.
And he is now going to be back with his friend Jim Wyatt over at William Morris.
Friend or frenemy, we don't really know.
No idea.
I don't really know.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Sam Haskell, who used to work at William Morris as the head of television,
yep,
is no friend of Jim Wyatt.
Oh, no. He's writing a book with co-writer David Renson, which is a huge critique of William Morris under the leadership of Jim Wyatt. It's called Promises I Made My Mother. And he's being repped by Endeavor, which I absolutely love. And it is telling about stories about this, that as soon as Jim Wyatt got there, how he undermined Haskell and the way that he ran things, and that drove Sam Haskell to have to go to church every morning to pray for guidance and, you know, patience to make it through the day. I can't get enough of this. I think this is just so endlessly cool.
Well, right now, you know, Jim Wyatt, by the way, is the chairman of William Morris, and he was one of the heads of ICM when he left. And the book, it's one of those tell-all, dirt-throwing books that people in Hollywood love. I wonder if people outside Hollywood will give a rat's...
Oh, I don't think it will do very well. I don't think anybody cares. But I would read it.
And that's all that matters.
I mean, but we're talking... These are people that you know, we know. You and I know. But
we're
I agree. Nobody else cares about.
Yes, that... Well, some people care about it.
Inside baseball people
yes,
care about it.
That is correct. Well, right now, Endeavor has 80 agents, and I believe William Morris has 300.
Yeah,
so
just part of the cool factor.
So this is going to – some shakeout will occur. There's going to be a lot of talent reps out there looking for jobs.
Yeah, a lot of William Morris talent reps looking for jobs, I think. I mean, Endeavor's already kind of, you know, sloughed off some of theirs, and, yeah, William Morris, it's just – I'm surprised that it's taken this long. I'm surprised we haven't heard anything yet.
It's going to be a bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Meanwhile, across town, Paradigm, a boutique agency, which represents the likes of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and who else do they represent?
Catherine Heigl.
Catherine Heigl. They are beefing up their music group with...
their Christian music.
Their Christian music.
By buying, Third Coast Artist Agency.
Yeah, they're
Third
actually...
Coast being, I mean, they're Nashville-based, so I guess that would be the Southern Coast.
I guess we could say in smaller merger, agency merger news.
Yeah, in smaller merger news, Paradigm has bought Third Coast Artist Agency, the Christian-based label, Nashville-based, that represents acts like Mercy Me and Jeremy Camp and the David Crowder Band, all bands I have never heard of. But Sam Gores, who runs Paradigm, is scooping up those Christian music acts, apparently.
Beats me. It's all over my head. Literally, because they're Christian. Get it? It's
Oh, that's very clever. Yeah.
Well, you know, we once again failed to get everything in under an hour. Maybe when we edit it, it will be under an hour. One thing we should probably say before we go, we hope to include your opinions and thoughts and emails and voicemails at the end of the show. It'll help us not talk so much, for one, and...
Get feedback.
So definitely drop us a line via email. You can do so. The email address is dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. I'm going to look up the phone number here.
Because we never remember what our own phone number is.
At some point, it's going to be an 866 number, a toll-free number. But in the meantime, they have us receiving
calls at an 847 number.
847-235-4899. If you want to call
that's
us.
That's it. Call me.
Yeah, call Karen and make sure that you follow her into the movie theater when you give her your 3D glasses, your expensive Dolby 3D glasses.
Yeah, I'll smuggle them out for you.
Right. 847-235-4899. To leave us a voicemail, we'll go through the voicemails at the end of the week, pick a few, play them back on next week's show. Same thing with the emails. Links to all of the stories we discussed today are in the show notes, which can be found at showbizsandbox.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Our name on Twitter is showbizsandbox, so it's @showbizsandbox. We're on LinkedIn. We have a group on LinkedIn. Just look up Showbiz Sandbox group. Same thing with Facebook. We have a Facebook group called Showbiz Sandbox on Facebook.
Which I joined.
You can send us news story ideas. Oh, you did join that.
Finally, yeah.
You're the one.
That's me.
We have if you want to send us stories, you can do so via email, dirt@showbizsandbox.com, like we mentioned earlier, or you can tag stories on Delicious, on the social bookmarking site Delicious, by putting the tag Showbiz Sandbox in, and we'll look for that at the end of each week as well. I think that's it. I mean, we have a YouTube channel. We haven't posted anything there. That's
but
about
we
it.
Will. We will someday.
One day we will. We'll actually have something worth posting.
Thanks for listening.
Until next week, play nice.
Play nice.